How crazy is this? Mm-hmm. What's the point of living in Utah if you can't be surrounded by neat things?
Well, you know, you couldn't always just hop on a road and drive here, John.
Don't bring me down. I would have arrived on a horse.
I'm sure you would have.
What do you think? Do we just knock?
It's actually open.
Oh, hey, Dan.
Ah, so you made it.
Indeed, we did. Excited for the episode today. Good. I got to interview Dr. John Peterson, and he had some crazy things to share about the conflicts between the Native Americans and early saints.
Pretty eye-opening, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm guessing when you say conflicts, you're not just talking about arguments.
No, no. There were some tragic affairs.
So do you think you have a better understanding now of why?
Yeah, and that was, I think, was the most elucidating thing. It was like, it's not a black and white history. It's gray, it's muddled, it's confusing, and both sides have justifications for their actions.
It'd be nice to be able to choose one side and say they were completely right and these were completely wrong. You can't do it.
And even Brigham admits to making mistakes.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's go on in.
Okay. Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints represent a faith practiced by millions, a faith which has also inspired its share of controversy.
I think if you look at Brigham Young's whole life, well, it's a conundrum.
I'm Camry Bagley Fox, and together with John Wilson and Professor Daniel Peterson, we work to uncover unexpected twists in the character of a man that we thought we already knew.
What do you think?
It's nothing like I expected it to be. I don't know what I was expecting, but this wasn't it.
Exactly.
I'm curious, is this how it was originally?
You know, in general structure, general outline, I think, you know, I doubt that it was kept up quite as well as it is now, back in the days when it was an active hub of activity.
I love all the chimneys.
Well, the real question is, did they fight a battle here?
Not at this fort. But it's important to recognize that there were forts like this across Utah and that battles really did happen. There were actual conflicts. Sadly, it seems that warfare, battles, things like that are just natural to the human species. You know, our own country was founded in a war that was fought to obtain freedom.
Right. Freedoms that the saints expected but were denied, and that was part of the reason of driving them out here.
I'm guessing that they weren't necessarily able to practice their religion in peace, given the forts that they were building.
No, let's just say that the saints didn't get what they expected when they came. The fort was actually built in 1867, but it was built not only for defense against Indian attacks, it was built as a way station on a major north-south thoroughfare. So, for example, even today, I-15 runs not too far from here. Lots of people traveled through here. Brigham Young himself stayed here more than once, apparently.
Right.
Yeah. It was used for other things. There was a telegraph office here.
Right.
Yep. Mail couriers, stagecoach drivers, and so on would stop off here.
Now, Dan, I actually don't know very much about the history of the Native Americans and the LDS settlers. Can you give us some more info?
Yeah, before we started this, I don't think I knew anything about it.
Well, let's try to go back a little bit further, give some idea of the situation the Native Americans were in. Native American populations in North America dropped precipitously in the 100 years before the Latter-day Saints arrived out here. There are a lot of reasons for that. There were battles, for example.
Like between tribes or against the settlers?
There were certainly battles between tribes. Those had always been going on. But also battles of resistance against incursions of European settlers. And probably connected with the European settlers, the Western settlers, were unfamiliar diseases,
right?
Things like that. But I'd say also the disruption of their economic way of life. I mean, they had certain areas where they hunted, places where they knew where the watering holes were, and so on and so forth. As they're driven from their homelands, that's disrupted, which is going to have an impact on population sizes and so on, the ability to survive.
Right.
They were literally forced from their homes.
Uprooted and driven.
Yeah.
So the Native Americans are forced from their homes.
Right. In fact, coincidentally, in 1830, the year that the Book of Mormon is published, you have the passage by Congress of the Indian Removal Act.
Oh man, I feel like I have a guess at what that was.
I think you can pretty well tell from the title. The idea was that the federal government would negotiate with the eastern Native American tribes in order to acquire their lands. In exchange, it would give them lands west of the Mississippi and some assistance to moving. Now, this was all supposed to be voluntary.
Right, but it wasn't. In practice, it was compulsory.
Right.
And it led to the Trail of Tears and other tragic events.
Now, the saints sent missionaries to the Native Americans, right?
They did, and very early, which to me says a lot about their genuine belief in the Book of Mormon. It's striking to me that one of those who goes is Oliver Cowdery, and it's a very difficult journey in the winter, a terrible
time. Because they're sent to Missouri, right?
Yeah, yeah, out to the western edge of Missouri, so about as far as you can go and still be in the U.S. or just outside of it. But they go out very early with the idea of taking the gospel to the descendants of the Book of Mormon peoples.
And at the time, there were somewhere around 500 tribes, different tribes of Native American Indians that existed in the nation, right?
That's a lot of people to share the gospel with.
Yeah, but the saints felt an obligation. I mean, they felt that they were a new covenant people in a restored church, but they also believed, because of the Book of Mormon, that the Native Americans were a people of promise related to Israel. And it was their job then to take the gospel back, if you will, to the Native Americans.
So aside from just the spiritual side of things, what was the relationship like between the Latter-day Saints and the Native Americans?
I suspect that it wasn't fundamentally different at first from the attitude of other European settlers. And so there were no doubt prejudices and attitudes towards the Native Americans and fears and hostilities and suspicions that they would have shared with other people. But they did believe that they shared this heritage and that was part of their obligation then. It was a divine calling to take the gospel to the Native Americans.
But despite that, you don't really hear any big success stories of conversion.
No, you don't. I mean, in that first mission where Oliver Cowdery went and Parley Pratt went and a couple of others, they get out there and they preach, and Parley reports that they preached to one of the chiefs of the Delaware, the Lenape people, and that chief had said, look, I believe every word of this. But shortly thereafter, federal agents came out and said, you can't do that. You don't have a license to preach out here in Indian
even
territory.
Even back then.
And so that came to an end, and they couldn't really follow through on it.
So we've established kind of the general idea of what was going on in America at the time.
Right.
But I think in order to address the question of who was Brigham Young, right? Was he this native-hating, whatever, all the different allegations, we've got to hone in on Utah.
Right.
Like, what was happening in Utah at the time? Who were the players? What were the tribes? How did the saints' arrival disrupt that and all that kind of a thing, which was actually the subject of discussion of my interview with John Peterson. He's an expert in that era and in that section of history, and it blew my mind.
Well, John, it's an absolute pleasure to be with you today. I'm excited to get to know your mind and what you understand about this specific period of history for Brigham and for the saints, but I would love to get to know you as a person first a little bit more. Can you tell us about your background, your history, and how you came to be where you are with the knowledge you have today?
One of my great-great-grandfathers was at a meeting where Joseph Smith urged everybody to go start keeping diaries. His name was Lorenzo Hill Hatch, and he went out at 17 years old and started. For me, Latter-day Saint history is family history. My father was a major Utah historian. He was educated in the academy, you know, in the schools, and viewed things both with an eye of faith and with an eye of knowledge and understanding. So I was raised in such a way that nothing was taboo. So like around the kitchen table, we could talk about the uncomfortable sides of Latter-day Saint history. On my other side of the family were all Indian missionaries. So I grew up having an interest in Native Americans and particularly Latter-day Saints and Native Americans.
It'll be interesting to hear your perspective based on what you've studied and what you know about this era in the 1860s. And so can you tell us about what the saints found when they entered the valley?
The relationship between the Native Americans and the Latter-day Saints started as early as the week they landed in Utah in July of 1847. Even though Brigham's general position was based on revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith, like, there's a role for Lamanites, and a big one. The Book of Mormon was restored to bring them to the knowledge of their fathers. So the church had a great mission relative to the Latter-day Saints. When Brigham Young came here, of course, he was happy to be smack dab in the middle of Indian country to be able to fulfill that calling. There were other things to do, like build settlements, canals, ditches, organize the people, send people to colonize in different areas, raise cattle, and the day-to-day wrestling resources from the land almost caused that mission to be pushed to the background. Brigham Young repeatedly tried to keep it forefront, but even for himself, you know, having an ideal versus feeding your family and keeping the church together and running, he could lose sight as well. Mormons tended to settle everywhere that a river came down out of a canyon. And there were alluvial plains there where the river or creek started to meander back and forth and animals collected and there was food. And that's where the Indians came to hunt, to fish, to gather. And all of a sudden Mormons come and claim it. I liken it unto if today a foreign group of people came and first they settled maybe at Costco and Sam's Club and some of the larger grocery chains and took them over.
Yeah.
And forced us all to go to the smaller places. And so maybe we're going to Smith's and Safeways now, but then forcing us out to convenience stores so that now we can only live off what's at Gas and Go.
Sure.
or at Maverick. And Indians had nothing to do but to say their cattle disrupted our system. Let's take some of these cattle as a tax for them taking our land. And so you get a different mindset where to them, it's not theft. It's this destroyed my way of life.
Right.
And these Mormons all have cattle and I'm going to help myself.
What was the saint's perspective of the natives as this was happening? What was their paradigm that they were operating on?
That's an important question. Latter-day Saints then and now come from everywhere. Some came from the northern states, some from the southern states, some from here and some from there. Plus, you have all these immigrants coming who weren't American at all. But speaking for the Americans, most Americans had already grown up in a multi-generational culture of believing that Indians don't make the lands productive. We're going to come build cities, farms. We're going to make the land blossom of the as the rose. And American culture was that the Indian was in the way of progress.
Right.
So in their town that they had lived in before, they had already participated in running Indians out, and they had participated in great Indian upheavals, and they had learned through experience, not justifying this in the least, I'm describing their
right.
culture.
Like what was the paradigm?
That the way to succeed with the Indians is to treat them harshly.
So the Saints arrive in the Salt Lake Valley and they come into this area that was actually a buffer zone between two enemy tribes. So there were no white settlers, there wasn't anybody, which was actually a blessing for the Saints to arrive in a neutral little piece of land.
Yeah, I think you can see that almost as providential. If they had landed in an area where they would have been met with an immediate hostile response, history might have been very different, but they arrived in the right place. This really was the right place.
But they didn't then stay in the Salt Lake Valley, right? They wanted to expand
outward. They wanted to expand. Brigham Young's vision, which was really Joseph's vision. I mean, Brigham was always trying to make real what Joseph had envisioned, was to build a kingdom out here and in a place where land was available, where you wouldn't have to deal with Missouri settlers or Illinois politicians or that kind of thing. It was an area that was pretty much open.
Would you kind of say it was a type of manifest destiny thinking?
I think it's related to it. You know, manifest destiny was the idea that the United States is predestined, foreordained to expand across the continent, you know, go from sea to shining sea.
And that's not an LDS sentiment. That was colonist.
Yeah,
that
was an idea that was common to a lot of Americans. Did the Latter-day Saints partake of that? Probably to an extent because they were Americans, most of them, at least in the early days. But that wasn't really the reason they came out here, of course. They didn't come to extend the boundaries of the United States or to expand the empire.
They were fleeing persecution as refugees,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They were driven out of the places they'd been before And I remember one general authority at the end of the 19th century said famously, we came here voluntarily because we had to. They really had little choice. They had to get out beyond the boundaries of the U.S. to find a place where they could be left alone. Hmm. Then it turns out they weren't quite left alone as much as they had thought.
Brigham almost immediately, and you could argue almost strangely so, begins expanding.
Yeah.
Right. You could see a world where it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to show up, you're going to establish,
right.
You're going to build all this local infrastructure.
Yeah.
But it was
immediately, yeah, sending people out to, and in many cases for economic reasons, to get this resource. We need to grow cotton. So you go south where cotton maybe can be grown. We need to do this, do that. We need to find our way to the sea. So they start forming the corridor, which is basically I-15 going down, you know, through Las Vegas, Latter-day Saint settlement, San Bernardino, Latter-day Saint settlement. It doesn't last because the Utah War in 1857 means he has to call people back. So we abandon a lot of those and give up the idea of the great Deseret
Zion kingdom,
state,
yeah,
the kingdom. But initially the plans were huge.
Well, it's like John Peterson said that if you were to have looked at a map of the sort of maximum expansion ring, that it's bigger than Alaska.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that Brigham had this mindset of, I'm going to go out and I'm going to claim land as quickly as possible so that God has space to literally build the kingdom of Zion in a place that we will never be driven from.
That's right.
Again.
And bring in the gathering, the gathering of the saints.
This is our place.
Yeah.
And in addition to doing this expansion for economic reasons and things like that, he was motivated by scriptural injunctions just like Joseph had been, one of them being Daniel chapter 2, right? The stone cut without hands from the mountain, eventually rolling to fill the whole earth.
One other thing that we probably ought to mention is that Brigham was determined they were not going to be driven out again. They'd been driven from state to state and finally out of the states. There really weren't too many more obvious places to flee to. So when we got to Utah, they wanted to make this a sturdy, powerful kingdom with a bulwark, the Rocky Mountains, you know, between them and the states. And the idea was they're not going to leave. And so when people start hinting, well, we need to drive the Mormons out, said, no, we're not going. Where are we going to go? You've driven us and driven us and driven us. Where are we going to go now?
And I'm sure that mentality adds to the drama of how do we reckon that
with the Native Americans,
with the driving of other people out so that we don't get driven out.
Yeah, but you know, there's one other thing too. The encounter with the Native Americans is useful, fortuitous you might say, or maybe providential, that Brigham sees this as an opportunity when he does realize that there are going to be contacts with Native Americans. This is fabulous because part of our mission is to take the gospel to the Lamanites and to return them to the covenants and to the promises of God. And so now we're right here in their territory. We can do this.
And how did that go?
Not quite as seamlessly as you might have hoped.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
Initial encounters rarely tell the whole story. In our next episode, we explore how early goodwill ultimately spiraled into conflict. Join us as we dive in.
At first, he says, we've got to stay out of the way of the Utes.
Okay.
They're too powerful. They can wipe us out. There's not enough of us here.